This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Now Grealish. Grealish weaves inside. Great ball to target. Target! Additional time remaining, and he gets the most dramatic of winning goals.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host and editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me is Mr. Chris Budd and also Mr. Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground. Welcome, as always, gentlemen, and
hello.
Thank you for joining
hello.
Us.
Hello, Villa friends.
Mr. Rogers, you are back day tripping in Dublin, I hear on the grapevine.
Well, this is it, that when I hear Chris Budd refer to me as Route 1 Rogers, I have to come in direct, don't I? I'm here to contest, although I did hear there's some VAR controversy actually last week on the Scott Hogan touchcare meter, but we'll touch on that later.
We'll touch on that later. Now I've managed to smuggle in a couple of Irish chaps into the Wolves game, which is obviously now sold out, the cup game. I'm quite looking forward to that game now. But anyway, the first and main game we are going to talk about in this episode is obviously a game that could have left us feeling many different ways. I mean, if it ended 1-1, I think the whole narrative changes completely. But one goal in plus 4 minutes at the fourth minute of injury time kind of changes everybody's perspective on the Villaverse. Coming up in the show, we will quickly have a Villa dump just to discuss what happened in the Brighton game within 1 minute before we get on to the 3 points. From Ajax plans of what they're going to do in the UK when they visit for the Chelsea game, which they're actually banned from going to see. Also, we'll look at the mass punishment loophole that Bratislava are going to do to manage to get 21,000, well, allegedly 21,000 home fans into a game that's meant to be played behind closed doors against Wolves. And also there's been a parliamentary select committee on the administration of football. And then we'll get into the Brighton game, obviously discuss Jack Grealish, who put probably one of his probably best performance of the season, obviously in front of Mr. Gareth Southgate. And we might sneak some kind of mutilated form of the Scott Hogan touch count in the show. Right, before we get on to the 3 points, for you people who can't last without a mention of Villa, let's in 60 seconds digest what happened at Villa Park against Brighton in a 60 second Villa dump. Mr. Chris Budd, over to you.
Brighton start well, really good passing, great movement off the ball. Horahan foul, clearly isn't a foul, let alone a yellow. Brighton score with a header, shit defending, good header from Webster, could have come to Villa in the summer by the way. Nearly 2-0, great save from Heaton from Connolly. Red card for Aaron Moy, the most ridiculous first yellow, stupid second, easiest decision for the ref ever, no VAR needed. End-to-end match though, really entertaining. Horahan gets a free kick, good save, then scores. Big Wes fouls apparently, good finish though. VAR bullshit, you could literally have time to have a Villa dump or a Villa dog. Super Jack ghosts in to score, nice cross from Mr. Gilbert, thank you Mr. Gilbert. Brighton threw it on the break, though, 1-1 at half-time. Second half, Villa have loads of the ball. Hourihan, McGinn, Criminally and El Ghazi all missed good chances. Jack gets the ball at the end, takes two players out of the game, sets up Matty Target. Thank you very much. 2-1, Limbs, chaos, victory, 3 points.
Still got 5 seconds. Anything else to add?
Up the Villa.
Up the fucking Villa.
Up the fucking Villa. Right then, more on that game coming up. First of all, the 3 points. Point number one. Today, there was a parliamentary, I think I can call it, select committee on football governance, or to give the full title of the subject, the administration of football clubs. Obviously, this was all around what happened to Bury and how the football family can let Bury slip out of existence, well, as a EFL club. There was two panels. The first panel, the MPs were the same MPs, but first of all, the witnesses was Malcolm Clark, chair of the Football Supporters Association, and Tom Greatrix, the vice chair, who I both know from my dealings as a member of the National Council of the Football Supporters Association. Plus, there was a former director and insolvency advisor from the Forever Bury Group, who are obviously trying to save the club at the time. And they were very eloquent. Then the next panel of witnesses was Greg Clark, the chairman of the Football Association, Debbie Yevans, the executive chair of the English Football League, and then Richard Masters, the interim chief executive of the Premier League. And I watched a lot of the stream live. I mean, I'll put the stream in the links. You can actually go back and watch it. And it's quite interesting to see. I mean, the fact, just a couple of takeaways quickly. The fact that the FA first got involved in the Bury situation after Bury were no more a Football League club, they got involved after the event, pretty much tells you all you need to know about how it's kind of set up.
When did you, Kurt, first get involved in the Bury case?
About 4 weeks ago.
Was that after the club went out of existence?
It was indeed, yes.
So the Football Association first got involved in Bury after it had gone out of existence?
That's correct.
I'm just stunned.
I mean, the Premier League, pretty much their representative was pretty much indifferent. He was just looking at this panel as if it was an inconvenience to his day.
Do you mind? I'm trying to earn money.
Yeah, which also, and there's hardly any communication between the three. The MPs were actually quite eloquent and on the ball, and you're wondering, this actually restores my faith a little bit in Parliament.
Whoa.
After the balls up of Brexit, you're just thinking, well, this is just a bunch, you know, on both sides of the benches, you know, a bunch of incompetent, fill in the blank. But here it's like they're quite erudite, and you thought, oh, actually, why aren't these guys looking after Brexit? This isn't the first time these people have been brought in front of a parliamentary committee. They're almost familiar with each other now. So it's time for some actual action. But I think the next 5 years, hopefully, football in terms of standing at games and also in this, in terms of a governance situation, should hopefully revamp for the better. Anyway, point number two, we've already mentioned, I think in the last podcast, I spoke a little bit about mass punishment as potentially not really the answer to eradicate racism from football.
Nah.
But Wolves are obviously travelling to Slovan Bratislava for their Europa League game. And these, you know, poor old dogheads have been waiting since 1980 for European away days, and suddenly they're not allowed to go. I mean, I think there's about 200 through a loophole, basically have very expensive Category 1 tickets. They're allowed in the game, but apart from that, that's it. But there's going to be 21,000, allegedly, home fans through a loophole, which basically states, I think it's under Article 73 of UEFA's regulations, accompanied children aged 14 and under from local schools and football academies can be invited. I think there's got to be a ratio of one adult to 10 children.
Is this basically 11,500 hooligans are going to round up one willing child to accompany them to the...
No. It's like they can. I think there has to be one adult to every 10 children.
That's still good odds. That's still good odds. I'd say
still very good odds.
Only children can go. But
it's a bit like the old days of war. They can bang the drum at the front.
Yeah,
it's a bizarre. I think it's
really weird, isn't it?
I don't know. Can you educate them while at the ground in the ways to not be a racist arsehole?
A nice pre-match PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah,
Oh, the only reason you're allowed here is because all the people who would have been here are complete racists. Oh, OK.
Yeah, speaking of being banned from a European game, point number three, UEFA have banned Ajax fans from a Champions League game, obviously, against Chelsea on November the 5th, which was meant at, and this is following crowd trouble. I mean, Ajax have got a bit of a reputation. The ban comes from a suspended sentence imposed after their Champions League game against Benfica last season. I think it kicked off in Valencia this season, so obviously that ban was kicked into action. Ajax fans think they've been screwed over, so obviously they've now in a situation where a lot of them have booked tickets and hotels for London, and they actually put a call out to Leighton Orient to see if they're willing to host 2,000 Ajax fans. Now, I think I might know how this came along because I'm a member of the Football Europe supporters group, and I've been on a couple of their they have like weekends where you have like discussions and
Hang on, a weekend in Amsterdam isn't discussions, David. You can
it's not in Amsterdam. I haven't been to Amsterdam on this, but there's basically you have your annual general meetings and you're voting and all that kind of stuff. And I went to one in Belgium and Belfast, but one of the two guys on the committee, one of them actually is a German guy, but he follows Leighton Orient. There seems to be a lot of interest on Leighton Orient. I think it was, you know, what happened when they almost went out of business, and that picked up a lot of support from hardcore football fans around Europe who have followed their story since. And there's also that one of the heads of the Ajax supporters group on this committee, so he's probably had a word with him. He said, hey, you know, you should go and see Leighton Orient instead. So Leighton Orient have got back and they said they'll be in touch with Ajax to see if they can facilitate them. I mean, it's a happy payday for
especially at 30 quid a ticket, according to Mr. Budd.
Well, up to 30 quid. It's between 18 and 30 pounds apparently.
Yeah, so if they can get 2,000 through the gate, then it's a nice little bonus.
It'd be interesting to see if Chelsea get wind of that and their fans decide, you know what, I think we'll go to Leighton Orient instead. And we'll have it off with Ajax.
Because I mean,
the prospect of Ajax against Chelsea is just a nightmare for the Met Police, because it kicked off before the Spurs game, didn't it? Last year in the Champions League as well. So Ajax will come and they will have a crack.
Yeah, I remember speaking to my Ajax mate, and we were talking about tifos, and I was asking him, how do you get your tifos sorted out? I spoke to Liverpool about this. This was going back, and we were getting so much resistance about doing anything in the Holt End, and so I was just interested how do, you know, the clubs who are well known for it, you know, do it, and how, you know, how do they get away with it, et cetera, et cetera. And he said Ajax actually had a fund that they would give the fans of 200,000, I think it was 200,000 euros a season, where they could dip into it to produce big tifos. But the condition was that because they were notorious in European away games for basically ransacking cities, I think they're banned in several Dutch cities as well in terms of when it comes to the domestic league, that any UEFA fines would have to come out of that pot of 200,000. So it was kind of a carrot incentive. It's kind of a positive incentive, but I quite like the way they did it. It was kind of progressive.
Or a 200 grand sink fund to cause as much damage as possible.
Yeah. Just smashed the place up.
Maybe my mind's wired up differently. I don't know. Carry on as you were.
Okay, lads. So I know we're famous for great tifos, but tifos end now. We've got a 200,000 battle fund.
War chest.
Let's go and buy a bazooka.
They couldn't buy anything with it. It was just basically to cover their fines, UEFA fines. So maybe if Villa get back into Europe, we can do a similar deal with the club. All right, anyway.
I'll be treasurer.
Moving on quickly, just to give a quick shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons. Thank you very much for Darren Byrne and also Mark Green for signing up in the last few days. Please do consider supporting the show by signing up, where you'll get access to bonus shows, including the anti-preview. Some good ones coming up with Manchester City, Liverpool and Wolves and the like on the horizon. You'll also get access to rewards. I've just given away three pairs of tickets for the Wolves Cup game. There's Maradona DVDs coming up, and also a few books that are actually coming out for the Christmas period. So go to the My Old Man Said website and check out the Patreon option on the menu, and please do sign up and you'll find more details there. Right then, and also also you can become a Facebook supporter as well. Just have a look at the supporter button on the Facebook page of My Old Man Said. On to the Brighton game. First thing, just quick interjection. First thing I heard as I approached Villa Park, going past the Aston Station, was a train pulling up, Villa fans getting off, and first thing I heard was the song about the size of Codger's cock. All this kick racism out and Shea racism, the red card, whatever.
It's the obsession, isn't it, as Chris said?
This obsession with some Villa supporters' obsession with manhoods. It's a bit worrying.
Chris has gone awfully quiet.
It's just fucking weird, isn't it? I'm trying to think what to say. It's just weird.
You're the authority on this, Chris. You've mentioned it a couple of... You made a point, I seem to.
I did.
I mean, people say, well, you know, why is that racist? Why is that racist? I mean, you just Google racial slurs and about black men's cocks, basically, and it traces back to slavery and Ku Klux Klan hanging gentlemen for allegedly, you know, raping white women. It's just, it all stems from there. And it's something you just need to get educated on. But also, you know, forget about the context. It's just a weird thing.
Yeah. So anyway, after you'd cycled past the train station on your penny farthing, what?
After I turned round and went back home in faux disgust.
We won a football match.
I mean, the context here is it was the first time we've won back-to-back Premier League games since Sir Tim Sherwood managed in May of 2015 when we managed to flicker into life for a few weeks and not get relegated.
God, yeah.
But the good thing about it is we've begun to chisel away at some of those crap records that the media keep mentioning. Obviously, we're in a period where we were pretty crap for a few seasons, in that relegation season where we hardly won a game.
It's all the ones that you guys mentioned in the last podcast that Paul Lambert was on a merciless, seemingly he was just desperate to throw every record away, and we're now, as you say, on the repairing them.
Yeah, so now we've repaired the fact that I think the win against Brighton actually ended a run of 50 winless games in the league when we fell behind at any stage. Which, when you look back to what we did in the Championship when we came back from losing positions regularly, to hear that stat, it's uncharacteristic of what we know about this team. And if we go down now because of what happened last season, we do expect, I think we have that because obviously Championship's a bit easier. You know, if you go 1-0 down, it's not the end of the world. But we expect to come back, which is kind of a good trait to still have until it's beaten out of us. But I think we will carry that on for the season at least.
It's a very good trait to have in this league, because I think that to take what you were just saying about the Championship is that the teams in this league are, you have to be so competitive that I think if you haven't got that get up and go about you, I think that you almost surrender to the fact that you're going to lose.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, I mean, we'll get into the nitty gritty of the game, but ultimately it was our sheer determination until the last second of the game that got us, you know, the 3 points ultimately. That's where that drive comes from.
Which is a trait the team had last season. I mean, even under Bruce, although we missed a penalty in the dying embers of a game that eventually led to him being sacked.
That was sabotage, but we all know that.
Yeah, but we did come back to get equal in that game, and we were picking up points in the last minute, which leaves us to think why people still leave on the 80th minute. I mean, I would... joking on Twitter that it's the 80-minute club, but it's just a bizarre one. Why go in the first place if you're going to miss potentially the most exciting part of the game? It's
out the door before Villa score.
That's what Anthony and Sean do, sit next to me. Literally, if Villa are losing, they bugger off down the stand and we always score. The amount of goals they've missed in the last couple of seasons are ridiculous. It's without fail. They missed all the Villa goals on Saturday. Yeah. They missed even the one that got disallowed, they missed that. They'd gone down that early for a beer.
It's a great goal, isn't it?
You know, this is the biggest release, the biggest emotional release is scoring in the last few minutes. You know, obviously, and we're not talking about games where we're losing 3 or 4 nil or we're winning 3 or 4 nil, where it's a done deal and you think, yeah, I'm out of here. The game's, you know, the points are in the bag. In that respect, you think fair enough. But when it's 1-1 and the opposition's down to 10 men and you need your crowd, you know, you need your supports to help you get over the line, it's just a bizarre one. It's like, you know, people have often done the comparison of leaving a film with 10 minutes to go. You don't really, why leave before the ending? I mean, the ending's normally the...
You've got to the trouble to get to Villa Park, and then you go, I'm not gonna see how this pans out. I just don't get it. Just for the sake of saving a few minutes in the traffic, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, do something in the traffic so it's not dead time. You know, learn bloody Italian.
Listen to this podcast.
listen to this podcast. Yeah. Yeah.
Become a patron for this podcast.
Yeah. Anyways, kept the same team again, so he fancied it. But I thought that midfield struggled.
Very unbalanced.
Especially the first half. It's like Brighton had their number, and when Brighton went 1-0 up, you could only see this game going one way because we were struggling to lay a glove on them.
They were savvy, man. They were set up much better. And for the first sort of, I'd say 20 minutes, it was one of the few times recently where I thought Smith's been outthought here. Somebody's got his number today. Like they've seen Villa and how they beat Norwich and how they probably played at Arsenal and Burnley, etc. And they thought, you know what? They clearly had a plan. They knew exactly all the, you know, as Smith uses the phrase, they had their traps set for Villa, and Villa played into their hands, and Brighton just went through Villa like a knife through butter. Like Horahan and Nakamba got walked through completely.
Mm. Yeah. Did they single out Grealish? I'm trying to work out if teams actually consider him a threat, or is it just, you know, we just think he's some kind of genius. I mean, we'll talk about Grealish in a minute, but this is the first time that I thought that he imposed himself on a game almost completely and turned it around.
Yeah, I don't think Brighton went out to kick him. They certainly weren't like some of the teams in the Championship. I think the last few weeks, especially, Grealish has actually had a reasonably, not an easy run of it, but he hasn't been kicked all over the park.
Yeah.
I thought it was the first game where he consistently carried the ball threateningly, you know, over and over and over again. And the close control that we saw at times was, I don't know whether it was because Brighton are quite physical, you know, they're a big football team, but they're not dirty by any stretch, are they? But they didn't allow Grealish to do as he pleased. He was just, he ghosted between their midfield and their defence all day, and it was a nightmare for them.
Well, I think it got easier when Aaron Moy got sent off. And I mean, shout out to him. Not the greatest day. First of all, England beat the Aussies. He's obviously Australian. England beat the Aussies at rugby earlier on.
Murdered
the day.
Them, Dave. Sorry. It's not beat them. Murdered them.
Sorry, murdered them. Yeah. Then, obviously, I think the key one was the silly first yellow card, I thought.
Stupid.
And then instantly, it was about 5 minutes later, he dives in from behind. You think, if you're his manager and his teammates, you just think, not a good tackle. Are you doing, mate?
Because he was a presence in the middle of the park, and that was one of the reasons why we're struggling. So when I saw him go off, I thought, this is gonna change it.
Just to completely bag out our Australian listeners as well, the winner was scored past their number one goalkeeper as well. He's in goal for them,
Ryan.
Anyway, as you were,
I think if Ryan was, because he's at least 6 foot, but he's still short for a modern day goalkeeper when you're going up for a cross against Wesley. So
bullshit,
I think
dislike.
Half of the reason that was given was because the keeper looked short and...
It was a sympathy VAR.
He looked short because he flapped at it.
And he looked like he was being bullied, I think. I mean, it was Grealish that basically got him sent off there. Mm. I mean, Grealish is Fowler Moy. I mean, I don't know if you're just on an aside. Did you see Grealish talking about music on, is it was one of the Match of the Day spin-offs?
Music.
The way he pronounces it, music. I mean, that kind of had me giggling for the weekend after that.
I won't be getting in the studio with him.
Every time me and my friend made a reference to music, we were saying music.
Music.
Anyway, sorry to our Brummy listeners out there. If I don't know. But that's not a Brummy thing, is it?
Well, he's quite broad, isn't he, Grealish?
I mean, I've got a Birmingham postcode, but I say music.
I thought it was music for everybody. I didn't know.
Music to my ears.
That was the first time I've ever heard music, as in the cow. Music. Anyway, we can't bag him out. He was superb, so we'll carry on.
He's a great footballer. It doesn't matter he can't speak. It's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant.
We'll get him some speech and language later.
Right, let's get on to the VAR, because
it's
a weekly thing.
Not again.
We need to come up with some fucking weekly segment on VAR. But Horahan's goal, because I was sitting in front of a rail, like front. I didn't have anybody in front of me, so I could really go for it in terms of celebration. So I could jump on the rail.
Did you?
So yeah, went mad because I thought, I couldn't see us. You know, they went down to 10 men, and you're thinking, right, there was that release still of them going down to 10 men. So you've still got that celebration building up, thinking, oh, we look like we're going to get, you know, steamrolled through here. Suddenly the whole game's flipped. Horahan bangs it in, and you're thinking, here we go, the second half's all set up. Celebrating big time, and then you think that's it. And then, I mean, I said I tweeted this, and I wasn't exaggerated. Somebody was making out I was exaggerating, but I literally sat down. Mr. Blick, David Blick, Warwickshire gin.
Thanks for the gin.
David Blick walked past me. He was getting the drinks in. So he was walking down the through to the concourse, and I'll say, yeah, you know, get me a purity or whatever. Then I thought, I think it was like, you know, it's another 10 seconds. I thought, oh, I'm going to join him. So I jumped over the rail.
Sunday morning, wasn't it? Was it Sunday morning?
Well, yeah. Went down to the concourse, looked for him. And, you know, that wasn't like, I couldn't see him straight away. So I was like hanging around. I thought, oh, maybe he's been in the toilet or something. I don't know. Then he appeared, had the drinks. We had a, you know, little chat.
Drank them.
Celebrating, you know, thinking, yeah, we're going to win this now. It's one all. Had a sip of beer and then looked up to the monitor, and it's suddenly the goal doesn't, you know, they show the replay, and then suddenly it's, and I'm thinking, how the fuck can it be this late? I mean, it was just exactly the same with Burnley and the McGinn thing.
It was deja vu for me that I had the opportunity to film the goal, film the celebration, trim the clip, had it primed on, because I'm the only person who can seemingly get a signal in this godforsaken ground. And I'm like, what the fuck? You know, everyone's back in the other half, and no one in the ground. No referee, yeah. There was no objection from any of the players.
It was just bizarre.
Even on reviewing it, I don't get it.
Wolves had a similar situation against Southampton as well. I saw a match of the day where they scored, you know, celebrations, blah, blah, blah. The Saints are kicking off. The referee blows the whistle and they kick off. And I think the referee was blowing because it was a, you know, you got a thing in his ear that it was a VAR decision, but Southampton just thought, oh, that's the kickoff whistle, here we go. Obviously in the Watford game they put up the wrong judgment on the screen, and the application of it,
shambles.
It's insane. And the Premier League,
it's making the Premier League, which prides itself, I think, on that professional sharp,
it's meant to be a polished,
really
polished,
well packaged, yeah, polished product, well polished. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. And this
is a shambles.
It's a shambles. It's actually got to the point now where it's laughably bad. It's actually affecting the competition.
Yeah.
And that's the key for me.
I mean, Grealish scored like 2 minutes into injury time and they ended the first half. And I didn't celebrate.
I didn't.
And most people around just looked up and just, you know.
It was the most apathetic.
Everyone up in the top of the halting was just making ironic VAR signals to the referee.
Yeah.
It was weird, completely. And even Grealish was a bit muted.
It is affecting the ecstasy of scoring a goal, isn't it? And celebrating.
What I did like about it, we'll get back onto VAR. Grealish, like, picked the ball up on the right, and he had this intent about him that he was like he was going to put that fucking VAR decision right. It was almost like he was the anti-VAR or the antidote. And he got the ball. I think he was expecting a 1-2 with Wesley. And Wesley obviously laid it off, but Grealish carried on his run to get into the, obviously, centre to end up on the edge of the six-yard box and bundle it home. But there was a lot of determination there. I think that he was sparked into life by that VAR decision. But on a side note, I mean, I contacted the club about VAR because I had a meeting with the Football Supporters Association. You know, in the group emails leading up to that, I said, look, we've got to do something about in-stadium communication of VAR, because, citing the example of what happened against Burnley, and saying there seems to be an inconsistency there, because at the Spurs game at the start of the season, you could see it on the screens when VAR was being looked at, and it was kind of, you know, humming in the background. And I thought, oh, this VAR thing's actually working out. I mean, the first couple of games, I think we, as a Villa fan, our experience was, and, you know, I'm sure if you listen back on the podcast at that time, it was like, yeah, this VAR thing seems to be, you know, fine, you know, no problem. But then, I mean, God knows what's happening. But the issue of in-stadium communication, the Burnley thing, where it was nothing, there was nothing on the screen. And so I put it on the agenda for this meeting with the Football Supporters Association, and a lot of other fan groups from different clubs were saying they had similar issues with it. Didn't seem to be any consistency from match to match what they were actually receiving in stadium. And I contacted Villa because I wanted their point of view, their side of the story, to what happened at Burnley. I mean, apparently they get the feeds from the Premier League, and they basically have somebody in the stadium on, you know, Villa staff side of things, who just presses the switch and, you know, it appears on the screen. Nothing came through from the Premier League, so they had nothing to show the fans. So they're sitting around. It was nothing to do with, like, old screens. I mean, because I said, weren't we promised new screens for the start of the season? Because they had to be, you know, we had to be set up to be VAR-abled for the new season. And clubs said, well, we are, you know, it has nothing to do with the screens. The current screens can do the job. And by the way, we should have the new screens basically by the end of this year.
Okay.
So look out for them. But it seems to be the Premier League problem. And, you know, just on an aside, the club have officially complained to the Premier League about VAR and how it's being used. Obviously, citing obvious examples, Crystal Palace, Arsenal, when we should have had a penalty.
It must have been quite a short letter. Stop fucking us over.
Stop cheating.
But, you know, you only have to flick on Match of the Day and see that pretty much every club's going through the same...
I've never known something be implemented so dreadfully, because it has all the potential and all the technology to back it working. They've just rolled it out in such a farcical, amateurish fashion.
It's unbelievable. Back in March, they invited... they had a meeting with the Football Supporters Association, and they were saying, yeah, it's very key about in-stadium communication, and we want you to report back to us, and blah, blah, blah. And then they invited people to actually the HQ, and unfortunately, I was away on the day. Also, it's in the middle of fucking nowhere. So I couldn't go to see it with my own eyes, but I was thinking, well, this seems like they're kind of keeping people informed and, you know, it should be all right. But I'm totally for VAR in terms of how other sports use, the actual, the backup, should I say, of video technology. I watched the South Africa-Japan rugby game. I think it was an England referee. And you watched that and you thought, this referee's completely in control of the game. And he requests to see, you know, what happened. He uses VAR to, you know, you basically say, tell me what happened, blah, 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 blah. And you think, well, surely this is what should be happening here. It shouldn't be like this inconsistency where can a VAR person sitting, you know, in another town or whatever dictate what should happen and overrule a referee? Should it not be just the referee caught, you know, unless it's blatant, but these aren't blatant decisions. That kind of Horahan goal, the Wesley and the goalkeeper, that's not a blatant foul.
Well, they call it clear and obvious error, don't they? Has there been a clear and obvious error on this decision? No. Is it? It's because that is a very borderline decision. Now, we're not talking about an obvious or not obvious offside or a line-based decision or...
Subjective.
Yeah, it's a subjective decision. It's not like a goal line or something.
And it should have said, unless the referee says, can I get a review of that?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of tackles, from my understanding of what I've read of it, it's only meant to be used for a tackle for dangerous foul play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was any, you know, in basically extreme decisions.
And that's what Alan Shearer on the bloody screens before the game talks about.
They're making it up as they go along.
Yeah, they're making this up as they go along.
Yeah, no, completely.
Like, I understood, as much as they rolled it out wrongly and slowly, I understand the Horahan one against Burnley. It's frustrating, but if people
see... The correct decision.
The Horahan being offside in the McGinn goal, you think, okay, I'm frustrated by it because it's minuscule.
It was the time it took.
But it's the right decision, so be it. Yeah.
On that one was the time.
This one, it's the time and it's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, and in all fairness, the decision at Watford, the Watford Spurs one was laughable. The one at Old Trafford for the Manchester United goal not being disallowed was appalling.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I mean, the bottom line, I mean, there's so many. We could spend all day going through them all. But I think the bottom line is, A, the speed of it has to be quick. Back in the old days with the offside, you know, if a goal's offside, you're celebrating. And it's, if you see it out the corner of your eye, you see the lines move, the flag in the air, and you've stopped. You haven't put that goal celebration emotion in the, in your football memories account. It's not banked because before you've made the deposit, you've seen that flag. So, you know, you haven't walked out the bank or whatever. But this is like, not only have you deposited it, you've left the bank, you've walked down the street. It's basically, it's become part of your football memories already because it's had a good few minutes to digest. And it's like, you can't suddenly swap it around. It's just too slow. And then the inconsistency, I think it's another thing that Villa as a club are not happy about. It's just the inconsistency of decisions. And we now go into games where we haven't got a clue. You know, when you see the VAR sign, the first thing you think is, now what?
Yeah.
When I watched that rugby game and I thought, there's a guy, referee's in complete control. He's pretty much talking the players through it because they're mic'd up so you can hear what they're saying. And he's using VAR to make sure his decisions are good.
Yeah,
it's to aid him.
Yeah.
And in the football version, it's just undermining the referee at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in terms of rugby, now obviously in the stadium, you can't hear what the ref's saying, but that's fine. That's a broadcast thing. But what you do know in the stadium is you can kind of work out what's being looked at. For example, if they're checking the grounding of the ball on the big screens in the stadium, you will see the grounding being checked from three or four different positions. And everyone in the ground goes, okay, they're clearly checking the grounding. And they will run whatever the contentious part of the decision is over and over. So if on the big screen, for example, the ball's in the air and everyone knows, okay, we've seen Wesley going up with the goalkeeper three or four times, we know that that's where the infringement lies. Now, I thought at the time, the only thing it could have been was the Wesley. Because there's nothing else. There's clearly no offside. There's nothing in the build-up to it. The other annoyance, of course, is we've actually had two very similar decisions, but on both sides of the spectrum. We had the Lansbury goal where the referee blew up and then the ball went in the net, and that was wrong. Now we've had the ball in the net and the referee hasn't blown up and it's been called up, and that's been wrong. So we've seen, we've kind of like, I don't know what else we can actually have disallowed using VAR now. We've had an offside one. What else do they want to give us? Like,
there's a big grey area that they've created where they've told referees, well, let it play out and see what happens.
See, I don't think in the Brighton game, I don't think it was a let it play moment. I think he genuinely thought, I think someone has gone in his ear and gone, we're going to have a look at this. You haven't spotted it. You think it's a goal. Everyone else thinks it's a goal.
Yeah, because don't they check every goal? That's what I can't.
Yeah, and then they flag it up to the referee. So this is the annoying thing. It hasn't like it's come up on the big screen, like in rugby, like in cricket, where people go, the referee has referred this upstairs. Mm. This has come from elsewhere. This is, hang on, we're going to have a look at this on your behalf. So could there be any more obvious proof of the referee being undermined? He hasn't asked for his decision to be checked. They're checking it going, oh, we think you're wrong.
Unless it's obvious where he's made an obvious mistake and he gets a whisper in his ear saying, you should look at this again.
Yeah, it's not like Wesley's bundled him over and then the ball's gone.
And I'm talking about, there's an off a ball, incident or whatever in the lead up to it. But, if you have two people in the VR booth, two people who both think, right, that's, if one goes, that's a penalty, and the other one goes, I'm not too sure, then do not consult the referee, because it's whatever the referee's saying on the pitch is good enough. But if both of them say, yeah, that's a fucking penalty, and the referee hasn't given it, then by all means have a word in his ear. But I think two people viewing it, so if they both agree, then it's beyond just subjective.
I mean, I don't know who does it, but I think they should now publish that before the game, so you know before a match who your referee is, who your two linesmen are, who your fourth official is. They should have who is the fifth official and is he a proper referee?
Yeah, the ridiculous situation that David Coote, who was the idiot at Villa Park, was the guy who was the official in the Man United game the following day who called that dodgy decision.
So when do you sit down and sort it out? I mean,
it won't be till the end of the season.
Christmas Day?
No chance.
It's going to be remembered as a farce of a season, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a VAR crash.
Yeah.
They need to sort it out. They need to sort it out in season, even if it's on the quiet, because, I mean, you can imagine some big, big decisions that's going to cost a lot of teams a lot of money.
About, at this time of the season, it's not acceptable, but they're getting away with it because this isn't costing teams relegation or championships or places in the Champions League.
Yeah, you wait until they're getting sued.
Yeah, if they're getting sued by a team who should have got top four and be getting a few hundred million, or a team who's been relegated because of a dodgy decision, and they've cost them however much it is, it's just kind of like, it's gonna get very lively very quickly.
Sorry, going back to that I mentioned in the 3 points about the parliamentary committee on the administration of football clubs. The FA representative, is it Greg Clark, said three EFL clubs had basically broken financial fair play, and he said, he's obviously had conversations with them, and he said one of them, a big club, basically said, well, we have a rich owner and we can afford the court fees, so try and sue us.
I hope that was us.
I was thinking, who's that?
I really hope that was us.
Go fuck yourself.
I'll play the clip now.
If I give you an example of financial fair play in the Championship, it clarifies that even more. We had three clubs who broke the rules. And I phoned each of the chairs and of the owners and said, if you don't comply with the rules, we will sue you. And a large one laughed at us and said, I'm a very rich man and I have very large lawyers. You're welcome. We received a judgment for £54 million in the High Court. The other two settled. In football, there will always be chances you try to break the rules and you have to take them on.
Anyway, let's get back to the game. It's a few disappointing performances kicking around. I mean, El Ghazi,
a real passenger.
And what a miss.
Oof.
Horrible.
I think Horahan should have scored in the first place. I mean,
he should, but you give the keeper a little
straight
bit of
down
credit.
The middle.
From point blank range, the keeper as well. Yeah. But El Ghazi from there, shocking.
No composure. You could tell by just the way he was lined up as the ball came to him, this was going over.
Yeah, it was an awkward body shape, wasn't it?
Yeah. Who else?
I'm going to throw one out there. Target.
I was just about to say.
He had a stinker.
Brighton didn't have any problems getting past him, and he was almost like a weak spot that they'd actually targeted.
There was also in the second half, he had a free kick that was not very clever. And we had a few free kick takers
on
the pitch.
When you add McGinn, Grealish, and a few other people who can just smack it from, and it was right virtually on the line at the edge of the box. You think you very seldom see even superstars get it up and down from there.
When we
why is Matt Target going to do that when he never takes free kicks?
To be fair, Grealish did take the piss out of him in his post-match interview. that free kick was mentioned.
But he did redeem himself on 93 minutes and 50 seconds.
Yeah, and I think you saw there...
Brilliant finish.
Target and Grealish know each other from, you know, England under you know, whatever, 18s, 20, 21s, youth levels. So, and they seem, when Grealish was talking about him, he seems to speak with him with a bit of fondness. And you saw that, you know, link up there on that. Grealish knew where he was, the way where he played that ball in. And he thought there's potential partnership there because obviously Grealish, with accommodating Horahan, he's kind of going out left a bit more. So he's obviously going to be the man out wide left on occasion to link up with Target. So there was, you know, promising signs there for sure.
I mean, Target does superbly. I mean, the more you see the replay back of it, it's a really well-crafted goal. Obviously, McGinn's ball to Grealish is great. Grealish away sucks two players in, takes them out of the game with one ball is brilliant. But when you see the Target finish slow down, he hits it straight past the goalkeeper's ear. He's never going to get his hands there. It's past him before he even knows where to stand.
Because, I mean, there's always the, you know, Ryan should do better. It's in his near post.
No chance.
But I think it's the speed of it that's...
It's lamped past him, isn't it?
So. And it's you know, if it's at his feet or tries to go
it's
in the near post...
It's a vicious strike.
He's probably going to block that, but the only place he can aim it is past his ear. He can't get his hand up there fast enough. It's a brilliant
finish.
Although
talking on goalkeepers, I think Heaton perhaps also gave up, you know, really showed some, I mean, it's at least two quality saves.
Yeah, the one in the first half from Connolly when he came through was superb.
And I thought his distribution was sharp. I don't think there was any moment where you thought he took the wrong option in terms, because he was rolling it out a lot, obviously.
Do you know what, even in the building to the second goal, it was a long ball over the top, and rather than try and take it down, he just heads it, he just thumps it to McGinn. Yes. With his head, doesn't he? And gets them straight back on the attack.
I think Target had a little lie down and was feeling his thighs on him, basically telling him to get the fuck up. You know, I quite like that in a goalkeeper, bit of mad.
Yeah, kind of. I like the whole like, Schmeichel thing where he just balls at everyone indiscriminately.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing we've.
The good thing, actually, from the Brighton game that we've been talking about all season, really, and it was both of them were involved, was we're starting to see now the upgrade in the fullbacks coming good, you know.
Yeah. Gilbert,
you know, Gilbert got an assist.
Interesting.
Yeah, Gilbert was involved in the assist. Target got the goal. Now, would you have seen that in previous seasons from El Mohamedy and Taylor? I think not.
I think there's more to come from Gilbert. I think once his
confidence
cranks up a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, I think he had a difficult afternoon as well because
unfortunately his in-ball is excellent.
Yeah, he was on his own, wasn't he? Because El Ghazi had no intention whatsoever of tracking back.
El Ghazi's he's either a 2 out of 10 or an 8 out of 10, isn't he?
Yeah, he's kind of fair weather, isn't he?
The flip side, that Smith obviously saw that, hooked him quite early. And I actually thought when he came on, Trezeguet, you started to see the Trezeguet that we want to see, that he'll just get his head down and he will get you up the field quickly.
See glimpses, don't you, in these plays? Like in the first half, I think it was the first half with El Ghazi, he showed... the real good darting run where he cut inside, and I think it was Webster recovers
to
block.
Yeah, it's a great block.
But it's a great run, and you think that's the positive thing you want to see. You just wonder sometimes whether he's not necessarily sure what he's doing himself. You know, he's quite spontaneous, and whether that...
Yeah.
You've got to have that 100% natural ability to be able to pull off what you want to do. Do you know what I mean? That I'm not sure he's quite got it all of the time.
I just want to round off the Grealish discussion. Obviously, everybody's now clamouring for him to be in the England setup. Gareth Southgate was at Villa Park again, second time this season, both wins. So somebody get him a season ticket.
Get on the waiting list, Gareth.
Now, yeah. I mean, we've on this podcast basically said Grealish. Judith. We can understand why Grealish isn't in the England squad. So obviously, there's a few players out there in that position, but we didn't think he'd been really living up to his hype in terms of, you know, having a bigger footprint on in terms of determining, you know, how the game goes. And in this case, he's pretty much his fingerprints and his footprint was all over this game, and he was running the show from start to finish and appeared almost everywhere on the pitch, whether he was like playing at his own 18-yard box with a bit of trickery, which, you know what the incident I'm referring to, where he's in his own 18-yard box near the touchline, and he's got a man on him, and it looks like he's about to cough it up, and then he kind of plays him out, and then, you know, plays a pass and gets out, and half the crowd are panicking, and then obviously applauding him when he pulls it off, in terms of applauding something audacious. But that, I thought that was the first real conclusive proof that there is a role for Grealish in the England team, and it's not just claret and blue glasses saying.
I mean,
oh,
I think there's definitely a space in the squad. You know, whether he's going to be an England starter, I think you never know really until he gets his chance, if he takes it. But does he bring something different in the same way that Mings does to an overall squad of whatever it is, 20, 22, 24 players that you select? Absolutely.
I think so much depends upon form for England players as well. That you can. Yeah. Rashford's a good example of a player like that who, you know, I was just watching the Man United game at the weekend, and, you know, you have people talking about Rashford like writing him off, you know, very, very young footballer still.
Yeah.
And I think the comparison could be had for Grealish. The Grealish was still, even like last season, even into this season, perhaps is still on a development curve. And I just wonder, I think the next step for him is consistency. And
to be honest, Southgate will look at him, how he performs against the better players of Manchester City and Liverpool.
I was just about to say.
And if he can impose himself on those games and get some purchase, then I think you'll see him in the next squad.
That's the elite end of the game. And though I thought Brighton were very, very good, they are not Manchester City or Liverpool. I thought it was a superb performance. I don't want to take anything away from Grealish's performance against Brighton, because it really was a fantastic performance. Yeah. But the real test will be is if people go, bloody hell, Grealish has imposed himself, you know, and if we can get anything from those games, well,
a little bit like he did in flashes against when he went to Arsenal. It's those kind of games. Yeah. It's having these big sort of singular wow moments in matches, and then having the control through it. And that was the big.
That's where you're the standout marquee player, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, people go.
He won us that game, and everybody knows that, and all the neutrals kind of applauded his performance.
And it's also
as well.
That, you know, he had the singular moments that, you know, he scored a goal, made the goal, but it's similar to when we had someone like Gareth Barry when we were very good under O'Neill. He was dictating the tempo, and he was pulling their whole team around. You know, we haven't had a player like that in a long time.
Just to wrap off this Brighton game, I find it amazing because, you know, I'm standing there and it's like 90 minutes, we're into injury time, and I'm starting, you know, you start to think about what we're going to say on the podcast about this in terms of where Villa stand. And
didn't I just send you all a picture with nonce in it? Wasn't that what I'd done?
If we'd have drawn
that was
this game.
Summary.
If we'd have drawn this game 1-1, where would you see, we're playing devil's advocate here, where do you see Villa? Because obviously, you see, the press now, it hypes up everything. If a team wins, like, for example, Sheffield United beat Arsenal, suddenly Chris Wilder, there's, you know, The Athletic or whatever it is, putting out headlines like, oh, he's, you know, he's ready for a bigger challenge, blah, blah, blah. You know, he can do something at a bigger club. It's like, hang on a minute. Sheffield United have just got promoted. Let's see how they do this season.
And then let's be honest, they've just beaten a team who traditionally go to places like Sheffield United on a Monday night and get turned over. This is Arsenal being classic Arsenal. This isn't Sheffield United.
Grealish has a decent game, and suddenly it's after people going, yeah, he just needs to step up a bit more to be worthy of the England team. And then suddenly you're hearing like Danny Murphy going, oh, Grealish, he's been fantastic from the first day of the season to this game. He's been tremendous. But you're thinking how the narrative
changes
such lazy kind of insight. It's unbelievable. And nobody's kind of rational. And like Dean Smith, It came up to his first anniversary days after we hammered Norwich. Now, if we'd have drawn against Norwich or lost, would they have written those same articles celebrating them as like the second coming? No, they wouldn't. Yeah. And that was only like, you know, let's have a bit of rationale. That was 2 wins in 8 at that stage in the Premier League. It's like, just tone it down, because this is why people go polar opposite. There's like, whoever the manager is out or in so-and-so we trust, because it's almost like the media builds up. They hype any after any positive result. It's like super hype. They're the greatest thing ever, blah, blah, blah. And if they lose, it's, you know, the opposite end of the spectrum. So I think we just need to be a bit more calmer.
I mean, look at the Geordies. They've beaten Spurs and Manchester United so far, and yet they still hate Bruce.
Oh, that's probably an exception to the rule.
That is a moot point, Chris. We're not talking about him.
1-1, and you're looking at, we'd have probably been, I think, one place above the relegation zone. And it's amazing what a difference that one goal made, because suddenly
it would have also been the third time we'd have failed to beat 10 men.
Yeah, and think about the repercussions of that. We would have been thinking, this is going to be a bit of a... This is the third time we haven't taken a great opportunity, and other teams are taking these opportunities to beat your Arsenals, to beat your Spurses, to even beat Manchester City. And of course, it's, you know, it's a fledgling team, it's early days, and there's a lot of like rational excuses you can use for Villa not winning games. I mean, I've got no problem with that. But at the same time, this team has probably, like, we got promoted a season quicker than we expected when, you know, when we were talking about it, let's say at the end of February. We're also more competitive than we probably expected early in the games as well. I mean, we expected to probably pick up 2 or 3 wins, considering the fixtures at the start of the season were a bit softer than it's about to become. But that one goal and confidence does change a lot, and to be 11th now instead of 17th or 18th will make a big difference going into that Manchester City game, Liverpool game, which we're now thinking, oh, maybe we can get a point. Maybe,
well, it becomes a free hit, doesn't it? You're not desperate.
Yeah, maybe we can give Liverpool a bit of a scare.
I don't know what you thought about the Man United-Liverpool game. I thought there's something to be picked at there.
I agree. And same with City. I think that both of those sides at the back can be got at. Mm. It's whether or not Villa's defence remains to be seen if they're strong enough.
Put it this way, I was glad that Liverpool equalised, because I want, as I said on previous shows, I want Villa to be the ones to take their cherry.
To quote Kevin Keegan, I would love it if we beat them.
I'd love it. After that 6-0, just throw that one in. Still remember, we'd never forget.
I mean, the thing with, in, you know, in terms of Liverpool is that they rely on an incredible, I mean, probably the best front three in European football. Fair enough, no arguments. But I look at the guys they've got in midfield. I mean, I'm sorry, but John McGinn against Jordan Henderson, I can see Henderson getting snapped in half.
bold claim.
Because
the witching hour has arrived, everyone, for those who wonder when we...
Because Chris, I'm sorry, as much as I don't begrudge Liverpool winning the Champions League, but Jordan Henderson is not a Champions League winning midfielder.
McGinn gets sent off for snapping Henderson, and Villa get beat 6-0 again at Villa Park. With down
you
to
heard
10
it here
men.
First.
Yeah. Anyway, it just seems to be the second or third podcast that we've gone off on a tangent talking about the Liverpool game. You can almost sense our excitement of that clash.
We're going to do a 3-hour special of anti-preview against Liverpool. We've got about 7 hours worth of hatred in us.
Anyway, let's close this one out. We're going to, but people have been asking about doing a media Muppets section of the show. I mean, this is something we've actually trialed earlier on. There's a situation where you can just get 2 or 3 stories and you just bag them out, and then that just becomes repetitive. So I think, I mean, I was keen to do it because what I wanted to do is replicate the site and the best bits of the site. And I haven't done a media Muppets for, you know, good few months, just because it just became, it's like an avalanche of shit that some of the local press puts out, and a lot of those hacky websites. So it's almost like everything is media muppetry, and you just want to turn your back and walk away from it. And, you know, that's partly where I focus more on getting the podcast up to scratch and out weekly. But I think there is something in it. So if you're in the Madfew Facebook group, which is dedicated to the show, do drop us a Media Muppets article, related articles, and it's something that maybe we could do monthly, don't you think, or even fortnightly?
Mm. Yeah, the best bits.
Yeah, because I mean, one that got sent in was, I think, in the Birmingham Mail or Birmingham Live, writing about like the token article that most local papers, they just changed the name of the club, writing about the list of available free transfers that Villa could get, and it actually included a couple of Villa players on the list, which the people who sent in thought it was
Jonathan
a bit of a,
Conger, wasn't it, one of them?
Yeah, and James Chester as well. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's go and buy James Chester and Codger. But yeah, feel free if you're a member of that group, and if you're not, then join it so you can stay in touch with the show during the week, and we will do a media Muppets. Also, Scott Hogan touch count. We were going to have Max Stokes on tonight to have a crack at Dan Rogers' reigning title, but he went off to see the Villa under-23s instead and hang out with his mate Dean Smith and John Terry. But I just thought of something, actually, because we never thought the Scott Hogan touch count would ever amount to anything. It was just kind of a one-off
piss take.
So we didn't really put any structure to it. And that's kind of been evolving slowly. And I haven't actually spoken to you guys about this. So we've got this concept of the reigning champion, like you play in pool, winner stays on. So I think we keep that. But in these situations where the other guys can't be, we should be keeping tallies of what the score is between each other, like a test match. So it's an ongoing thing.
It's like top trumps.
So I may go back. Nothing like top trumps.
It's a bit like a fight.
No, I was just about to say. So I'm going to go back and count how many times.
Chris is the Afghanistan of cricket.
How many times you've beaten each other, whatever. So we have that ongoing tally to make any game interesting, if you know what I mean. So there's something at stake every time.
I mean, I had a pretty good run for a while. Dan's had a pretty good run. Max has been getting owned since day one, really. So.
So there's a chance if I go back and do the stats that suddenly Chris Budd's his gravitas increases, because we'll find out that it's actually 5-5 between you. Anyway, the next next week we will be introducing a new sponsor to Scott Hogan Touch Count for that week, which has a kind of a nice, I think it's a sponsor that can give you something that you might be interested in. So hold on for news of that. But let's have a quick friendly Scott Hogan Touch Count now.
Is it ever friendly?
No. This can go on to the tally. It's not for the title, though. Your title's safe, Rogers. You can.
Is this like one of those shit pre-season tournaments that you kind of get a trophy, but it doesn't really mean anything?
Well, no, this just goes on to your tally.
Don't make him bring the Peace Cup up again.
We don't know what the tally is between the two of you, but
this will be
added to the tally. We'll let the champion go first. So, you may be cheating. We'll go Scott Hogan, fuck it. He came on 75 minutes, 15 minutes played in Stokes. Stoke are starting to win again.
Yes.
It's because they've 15, dropped Butland, isn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly. They kept a clean sheet. They beat Fulham 2-0. Happy days. Another win under the belt. And fucking Huddersfield are winning as well, and under that fucking Judas, Danny
you
Cowley.
You had to slip that in. Let it go, Dave.
They've started winning. I don't like the smell of that. What's going on there? Anyway, Scott Hogan, 15 minutes. How many touches did he have? Dan Rogers, first go.
15 minutes. I reckon he had 6 touches, David.
Mr. Bird.
5.
Oh, it's still alive. Dan Rogers, second guess.
9 touches.
Mr. Bird, can he 4. Nail it? Oh, he's got it.
Oh!
He goes 1-0 up.
Football is the winner, Route 1, Rogers.
hang on, what's this? VAR is reviewing the decision.
There's someone at my window making a square sign.
That's not a square, Chris.
Let's go round 2 here. Another man who came on. Another man who came on the 75th minute was Keenan Davis for Aston Villa against Brighton.
This is a tricky one.
He had his effort, to be fair.
Chris Budd can go first on this one. How many touches in 15 minutes?
8.
Dan Rogers.
14.
Chris Budd, it's still alive.
Tension.
Come on, you're not allowed enough 9. Time. So, sorry, let me just refresh here. What did you go first time?
8
and a 9, and we've got a 14. Second guess from the Rogers.
11.
Right, we're going into the third round.
Okay.
What's the clue? You're in the ballpark-ish, so I don't think there's a need for another clue. So we'll just go for the deciding guess, and then the closest will take the round.
10.
13.
So what was your basis for these higher than I expected? We're talking 15 minutes. Did you see a man that was active in the game?
It bounced off him a lot.
He did bounce off him a hell of a lot, didn't it? Yeah. And whether or not they were actually meaningful touches is another matter.
Yeah, I don't think they were counted, because he ended up with 6 touches. So Chris Budd wins
2-0. I'm not sure about that one.
I think we all feel a bit deflated by that one, don't we? I don't really feel like a victory there.
I'm losing my passion for the Keenan Davis touch count meter.
Can't we have Codger on soon?
It was either bouncing off him, but there was one moment where he took on about three or four players.
And had a shot, didn't he?
So I thought that was like six touches in just that one move. Anyway, so I will do the tallies in the next few days, and I'll add that one on for the bud.
I'm happy about that one.
You're not adding that one on it's for not... the bud. You're adding that two on for the bud.
What do you mean two?
Not a one both?
Well, no, it's one game, though. Best of three. You know the rules. I should explain the rules before I go into a Scott Hogan touch count meter, because new listeners won't know what the hell is going on.
None of us do. It's a permanent state.
If you're listening for the first time, I'll explain the rules in the next episode. That will give you an incentive to listen. Right, okay, on that note, please do take the time to rate and review the show on Apple or Spotify or whatever way you listen to your pods. It just it kind of helps the show. It makes it easier for potential listeners to find. And if they see that it's worth their while from your reviews, then obviously we get more followers and more friends in the Mad Few. So please do take the time to review it on whatever platform you listen to as well. Any final words, gentlemen? It's going to get hairy in the next few games, isn't it?
It could be. It could go one or two ways. We could be going, oh, what's nice that goal difference whilst it lasted.
Yeah. I'm glad we scored five at Norwich.
It would go one or two ways. We might all be like,
Or it could be, fucking hell, Mings. He should be captain of England after those two performances against Manchester City.
The potential problem is, if we go to City and get something, and then if we beat one of these two, the, oh my God, we're going to win the league, brigade are going to come out in force. Oh,
it's got classic Villa that we'll go and get something from Man City and Liverpool and lose to Wolves. It'll be one of those.
But to be honest, if we got 1 point from those two league games, I'd be happy with that, because that would be a
more than most we'll get.
Exactly. So we'll leave it there. I mean, we'll obviously have a show before the Liverpool game, and we might sneak something in before that Doghead game as well, which I think it's a nice little sideshow. Full house, loads of dogheads in the house, and be interesting to see what team we play. I think Grealish will get minutes in that. It's not as if we'll be resting players, I would say.
Oh, definitely not.
And obviously Wolves have got a lot of away trips in those days before and after.
Yep, Bratislava to Newcastle, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Right, until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony.
October 18th, 2019. Ironical experience, as I was trapped by a competitor, the authorities, while I've been away in China. I haven't been arrested, as borne out by being able to send this tweet from prison. I am not in hiding in a cave in Afghanistan. The claims are false. True. And have been created by a local competitor, the police, attempting to cause damage to me. Legal action to follow, probably against me. October 18th. Also very funny how some people talk when they wanted to take Villa into administration, which would have meant minus 12 points and a very bleak Yorkshire northern future, but ask for payment for himself. Insinuating former employer involved in tribunal with I never regretful for what I tried for beloved AV, including the best exit in circumstances, is leaving the country at first opportunity. October 18th, 2019, 3 of 3 before they jail me. I only took one word. Veritas with me. It was on a sign I fucking prized it off with crowbar. I took it with me when I completed my education at Harvard, /printed it off on a Lexmark, and I followed it since then. Though they are very different in many ways in my home country, but you can never hate your mother or anything you disagree or dislike. Was hoping sports can embrace all. Goodbye, my friend.
OTV!
my old man said.
Recording. Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host and editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me, as usual, Mr. Dan Rogers of the Villa Underground and Mr. Club. Mr. Club?
I am the man of the club.
Clubber Langer from Rocky 3.
Mr. Clubfoot.
Mr. Clubfoot.
It's Wesley.
Mr.
I am a walking Sky Sports jingle.
Mr.
If you like a lot of chocolate on your biscuit, join our club.
And Mr. Chris Blood.
I'm now on Arsenal Fan TV. You get to me.
Blood.
Fucking hell.
Have another go. Third time lucky, Dave.
David had a stroke.
That's pretty good. That's a complete meltdown. Oh, this. Dear. That's worrying. I got all these emails today about dementia. I think it's happening. It's happening.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.